Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Lit Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Thea. Today, we'll be speaking with Amy Bradley and Catherine Seymour about what burnout is and why it is so prevalent today. Amy and Catherine's new book, Running on Empty, Navigating the Dangers of Burnout at Work, offers a story-based exploration of a growing risk and some real and deep practices that seek to improve the human experience of the present-day workforce and make organizations more viable for the future. The authors look at the current burnout situation from a lens of discovering and seeking to heal some of the root causes of workplace despair. Dr. Amy Bradley is a professor of leadership and management and author of The Human Moment. In 2020, she was named on the prestigious Thinkers 50 radar of global management thinkers. Amy works as adjunct faculty at several leading business schools and runs her own consulting business. Dr. Catherine Seymour is a senior partner at Korn Ferry. She specializes in personal and organizational change and the intimate relationship between these two, and has published articles about personal sustainability. She is based in Spain. Thank you very much, Amy and Catherine, for joining us today on the Lit Radio Podcast. I'm very excited to speak with you about your book, Running on Empty, because we at Lit believe that's a very important topic. So the first episode with you is going to focus on what burnout is and why it is so prevalent. But my first question for you is, why did you decide to write the book, Amy? Let's start with you.
Thanks, Thea, and thanks for inviting us on. So this question takes me back to December 2020. We were 9 months into the pandemic at that moment, and for many of us, including myself, you know, our lives were turned upside down by COVID-19. And I remember a particular moment where I was almost limping towards the Christmas break, feeling exhausted with work and having a week or 10 days off. And then in January, it was almost as though, you know, work resumed again at such a blistering pace that those few days that I'd had off just hadn't been enough to help me to feel refreshed. And I went into 9 days straight on Zoom, working 9 till 6. And I went out for a run with my husband after this 9 day block. And it was the first time that I'd been in the fresh air for days. And I remember feeling at that point, you know, I myself was running on empty. And actually, my own personal experience at the time was mirroring what Catherine and I were seeing in our work, in many of our conversations with the leaders and managers we work with. We were noticing people feeling or talking about being exhausted, feeling overwhelmed and overextended at work, and feeling quite cynical towards what their workplaces were asking from them at the time. And in many ways, feeling you're questioning their own ability at work. And what was striking about what we were seeing around us was that they seemed to be pointing towards the central features of burnout. So at that moment, we wondered whether what we were experiencing was reflecting a wider phenomena in society. And actually, within a day of posting our call for participation on LinkedIn for the research, over 30 people had come forward from all over the world. So our call for co-inquirers in our research seemed to be really striking a chord with a familiar phenomena at that time.
Yeah, I think this period was very difficult for many of us. And what about you, Catherine? Why did you decide to work on this book with Amy?
Yeah, thanks so much, Thea. And I agree with Amy, everything that Amy just shared. I think, you know, there were two Two main things that we were seeing, and maybe just summarizing a bit, is one was leaders in pain, right? So we were seeing a great number of leaders who were, you know, saying things like, this is not sustainable, I'm hitting a wall, I have nothing to give to my team, to my family, and it is relentless. There's this sense of, there's just this relentless, it was no longer a roller coaster or peaks and valleys of effort and then recovery. It just seemed to be this relentless culture of more and more and more and more. And people were just kind of starting to lose hope, I think. And then, you know, we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but there was the compounding of pressure from the workplace and pressure from home environments. Obviously, in the COVID pandemic, there was lockdown. There were, you know, people's children were homeschooling. So there was that confluence of two different pressure points coming together, and people finding that really, really unsustainable. So that was one part, was witnessing the sheer number of leaders and people that I was coming across in my work and Amy and hers, saying, you know, this is different. Something else is going on here. Burnout has always been here, and yet there was just this peak of people feeling the pain. And then there was the parallel process, as Amy described herself, of us feeling this pain ourselves. So in my case, you know, it was just an incredibly high-paced, pressured, all in the face of a lot of uncertainty work environments. I think companies in general were very fearful about what's going to be the result, what are going to be our results in the face of this world-changing situation. And the way that impacts on individuals is, you know, many individuals tend to take that responsibility on themselves and work more and more and faster. So that sense of exhaustion and that sense of this is not letting up was quite stark.
Absolutely. But then let's define what burnout is, because in your book you say that burnout is different from overwhelm. So what really is burnout, and how does it differentiate from overwhelm? Amy, we can go with you on that.
Yeah, what we found when we started to work alongside people, that burnout is really elusive, actually, and difficult to pin down, because everybody's experience of burnout is different. There are multiple routes to burnout, and people display or experience different symptoms. And following an experience of burnout, each person has to learn to heal in their own way. What we did in the book and in our research is we've drawn on, we're standing on the shoulders of some giants, actually, in our definition of burnout. We draw on Maslach, Schofeli and Leiter's definition, which sees burnout as a prolonged response to work-related stress that manifests itself in three ways. The exhaustion that we've both just been talking about, a cynicism towards our work, and an ongoing sense of reduced personal accomplishment. And we've talked, Catherine and I, in the opening question a lot about exhaustion. If I can just say something about cynicism, Maslach, Schofeli and Leiter talk about cynicism as that sense of becoming detached or even cold and skeptical about our job or workplace, where we experience ourselves as in some ways robotic, and we are losing or feel ourselves losing the human element of the work that we're doing. And even in our relationships at home, the sense of you know, losing care, even love towards our relationships. And the reduced personal accomplishment, that third aspect of burnout, is where that inner voice of negative self-talk or you know, the imposter experience becomes louder, and we start to question our own ability to do a good job. And what's interesting about Maslach, Schoeffele and Leiter's definition is that they say that only when all three of these states happen simultaneously is when we are classed as burnout. And they, you know, there's been a lot of writing by them and others challenging that burnout's been used too often as a synonym for tired. And in fact, we're not in a burnout epidemic if you look at their definition, because they say, you know, these three have to be simultaneously experienced in order for us to be in burnout. So according to their definition, only 20% of the working population currently profile as burnout. That said, and this is where our interest, you know, becomes peaked in this topic, is that they've also found that over 50% of the working population are what they describe as overextended. And that means that half of the working population perhaps may not yet be burnt out, but are on this route. And that's where we see overwhelm coming in. This state of overextension, where people are feeling overwhelmed. And we see, we can talk about this in a little while, but we see burnout on a continuum, with thriving at one end, this idea of running on empty or overwhelm in the middle somewhere, and burnout being at the other end of a spectrum. And I just wanted to say about the varying symptoms, because those people that we worked alongside who had experienced a significant burnout talked about it manifesting through symptoms such as, you know, amnesia, total exhaustion, mental and emotional shutdown, the ability to perform even simple daily tasks, and a variety of physical ill health outcomes. So things like impaired hormone functioning, high blood pressure, cardiovascular problems. You know, the burnout is a significant life experience according to us and our definition in the book. And in we've defined it actually in traumatic terms. This is a traumatic experience that people go through that they would actually say is a watershed moment in their lives. So, you know, we need to be able to, you know, say this is really significant. Overwhelm, as I said, lies somewhere in the middle of this continuum. This is the warning sign that people are running on empty. And from our research alongside people who felt at that point on the edge of burnout, they talked about the signs of overwhelm being this sense of overextension at work, spinning too many plates or more plates than they'd like to be spinning, a feeling of anxiety, you know, maybe an inability to switch off from work, a constant rumination where that inner voice of negative self-talk becomes louder. So these were all these symptoms of overwhelm. And I'll pause there, because Catherine, I don't know if you want to come in on this also.
Yeah, maybe related to the question before around what was our own way into this. You know, I think one of the places where we're so grateful for having done this work and for having found each other in this work is that, you know, as far as we can understand, and we have done some research on it, we were able to hold ourselves at that place of overwhelm, right? So where we were probably headed for a burnout, but personally, I never got to the extreme trauma of what I think a full burnout, and what we're seeing through the research and the definitions, is a full burnout. So that's where I think this book can be really useful for many people, not just people who have had a diagnosed burnout, but for all people who find themselves under pressure from several different angles, and how to actually adopt some practices and be able to keep yourself from trauma. Mm.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I think what you just said is very useful for many people to be able to differentiate between the two, because sometimes I know it might be very confusing. But then my next question, it is again connected to the COVID-19 pandemic, because you already talked about how you were running on empty sometime after the COVID-19 pandemic started. But could you explain how it led to more people feeling burnout or on the edge of it? Catherine, we can start with you on this.
Yeah, thanks, Taya. So the causes were coming from various angles, we found. And indeed, this was one of the findings in the book that came through, you know, the loudest and the clearest, that when one area of your life is really challenging, having a secure base or stability in other areas of your life can safeguard you from burnout or even from overwhelm. But when two or more of these important areas of your life start to falter, when there's pressure coming from different angles at the same time, then the danger of burnout becomes much greater. So for example, in the pandemic, we saw many people affected by the chaos of being locked down with many family members, for example. That was one end of the spectrum, managing kids' schooling while dealing with pressure from work, while also managing sometimes the health and the awareness of older family members, like parents or others. On the other side of the spectrum, you had people going through lockdown completely alone. So far from that, you know, chaos, they were suffering from isolation and the anxiety of loneliness. So that was sort of the home front of pressure coming from the pandemic. And then there was, at the same time, an inordinate amount of pressure coming from organizations, coming from workplaces, even from one's self-employed position. And the question there seemed to be, you know, at the start of the pandemic, how do we not fall behind on our business targets? How do we not fall behind on our productivity or maintain our level of growth and income? And that sentiment in some ways was so emotionally detached. It was so incommensurate with the realities of lots of people being diseased and dying. And this emotional disconnect in itself was damaging, right? It caused a cognitive dissonance or a contradiction in people's minds and hearts. You had leaders admitting to wondering, how can we as an organization be pushing for the pandemic not to be felt on our balance sheets when on a personal level, you know, there are people on our teams or family members of people on our teams who are dying or in severe danger, right? So there was a disconnect there, in addition to pressures coming from multiple sides at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all admit this period has probably been one of the most difficult ones, both in our professional and personal lives. So, Amy, have you got anything to add to this?
No, I mean, Catherine's, you know, said a lot there about the perfect storm we were in during the pandemic. In many ways, and we were really conscious, the two of us, that we were doing this research at a really particular moment in history. What's interesting is that many of the things that we saw in our research have continued. So this sense of overwhelm has not gone away. The sense of pressure from, you know, multiple places in people's lives has not gone away. So it came, I would only add that it came to the fore as the kind of perfect storm during the pandemic, but many of the things that we saw are continuing now.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we spoke about what burnout is and how the COVID-19 pandemic led to even more people experiencing it. But what are the early signs of burnout, Amy?
We just to say a little bit about the groups of people that we worked with by means of answering this, that people that volunteered to be part of our research, and by the way, without them, you know, this research and book could not have happened. So we're so grateful to these people for coming forward. They found themselves in three states in terms of their relationship with burnout. There was a group of people who had experienced significant burnout in the past and were looking back on their experience with some distance. There was a second group of people who felt that they were in burnout at the time of the research. And then there was a third group who felt that they were teetering on the edge of burnout and really close to it in this place of overwhelm. And what's fascinating to answer the question about the early signs is those people who are looking back on burnout with some distance who said, do you know what? All the signs were there, but I ignored them because my inner voice that was saying, take care of yourself, slow down, take a break, look after yourself, was overwhelmed by the voice that said, work harder. That voice that said, you need to do more, prove yourself, was louder than the voice that was telling them to take care. So they said all the signs were there, but they ignored them. And for those people who were on the edge, who were in overwhelm, you know, we talk about this as the warning, dashboard warning light for burnout. So these people who are in overwhelm, you know, we've mentioned it earlier in this recording, a sense of overextension from work, feeling anxious about work, checking work phones on weekends, on days off, in the evening, checking in, back in on work, difficulty switching off. So these people were either stuck on, so this sense of in overdrive, or stuck off, so this sense of feeling joyless, lethargic, difficulty making decisions. And these people were also noticing physical signs that they were in overwhelm. So one person talked about a gripping anxiety in his stomach for months. Somebody else talked about back pain. So their bodies were telling them that something was wrong and that there were warning signs there. Other things that people talked about as symptoms were having trouble sleeping, being more irritable at work, struggling to show others empathy. So these are some of the early warning signs that we found.
Yeah, I think that's really fascinating. It shows that we really need to listen to our bodies when they're telling us to slow down a little bit, which is very important for everybody. But then my final question for today's episode is, can you share with us your personal stories of experiencing burnout? You already said a little bit about that in the beginning, but could you share with us more? Catherine, can you start with you?
Absolutely. So this will echo, my story will echo some of the things that Amy's already listed, right? So I was working a lot of hours. I was experiencing trouble switching off. It just felt like the responsible thing to do was to, you know, work more and more and more, support my team and help things stay on track. So, but I had started waking up at 3 or 4 a.m. every morning, relentlessly, every single morning. I was wide awake at 3 a.m. Sometimes I would make it to 4, and unable to get back to sleep. And, you know, having all kinds of whirling anxiety that was filled with work problems and work challenges, but also family concerns, right? So my first concern was, how am I going to function in the morning if I'm waking up at 3 a.m.? How am I going to be able to sustain the back-to-back Zoom meetings and online teaching that I was doing? But then there was also, you know, concerns over, you know, how we were going to attend to our teenage and young adult children who were suffering. I think all age groups suffered in a different way, but my children, who were at that time between the ages of 16 and 24, four of them were really had different repercussions in different ways, right? Ranging from some issues with food and eating disorders and loneliness, anxiety. So So tending to that while also trying to take care of yourself, it's again back to that oxygen mask metaphor, like who do I take care of first here? And then on the work front, you know, how are we going to convert our business and keep things going as a consultancy when you know, many things, if not almost everything, was being canceled, postponed, and then luckily converted to virtual. But that became an issue in itself, right? When you convert everything to virtual and you don't necessarily have the resources to keep that running, it creates a bit of a bottleneck. So that was my experience of burnout itself or certainly overwhelm. So like I said, I don't think I ever had all three of the symptoms. I had the exhaustion. I might have had a little bit of the cynicism, and starting to get towards that place of reduced self-worth, right? Like, can I actually do this? Is anything I'm doing making a difference? But luckily never got into deep trauma. And for me in that experience, what was really helpful were things like walking in the woods, gardening. So the connection to nature is something that you'll see highly represented in this book. Also a growing discipline for completely disconnecting on the weekends. So I would say, you know, the walking in nature and the gardening were methods really to completely disconnect on the weekend, to really try and say, okay, I need an entire 2 days to disconnect from this. And remember, we were in a pandemic, so there wasn't exactly a lot to do unless you held yourself accountable to saying, I am not going to work because it's Saturday or because it's Sunday. The temptation was huge because there was a lot of work to be done and there wasn't necessarily a lot of other recreational activities going on weekends. So we weren't allowed to see friends, we weren't allowed to travel, etc. So in some ways, this book, the project of writing this book and doing this research with Amy was a really positive focus that allowed me to step back and reflect and build my resilience to, you know, we'll probably talk in the next episode about, you know, what are the first steps? What would you recommend to others? But just recognizing that this was not headed in a good direction. The honest and open conversations with Amy and with some of our other co-researchers provided that social outlet, provided a talking through and processing that is so, so positive to stave off burnout.
Mm. Thank you very much for sharing your personal experiences. I think that may be very useful for people listening to us today. So thank you very much, both Amy and Catherine, for taking the time to speak with me today to define burnout and talk about the early signs. And then I'm looking forward to our next conversations when we're going to discuss how individuals and organizations, what they can do about burnout. So thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Taya.
Thanks, Taya.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Don't forget to keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and at Lit Business Media on LinkedIn for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.